Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the top of Samachem and Aleph. The Gemara is going back to the limud that we saw from the different limudim that the Gemara had discussed. One of those limudim dealt with by Machteret. What do we do with the words Gneva and Chaim? Gemara said, oh, that's no problem. We use them for the limud of Rav. And now the Gemara is explicating on that limud of Rav. Kufa Amarav, Keren Ke'en Shiganav. When it comes to paying for the Keren, you pay for it Ke'en Shiganav. At the time of the theft, you pay back the Keren. Tashlume Kefel v'tashlume arba'a v'chamisha. When it comes to paying the Kefel, the double for Gneva, or four or five times for Toveach u'mocher, if he shechs it or if he sells it, k'sha'at hamada bedin. That's done based on when he goes to court, we assign the value at that time. My time with Rav. What's the reasoning behind Rav's position here? Amakra Gneva v'chayim. This goes back to what we said with regards to the Abame Machteret. By Abame Machteret, we wanted to know what we did with all of those words, because Himatzei Timatzei was the Klalim or the Ribui. And then we had the Mi'utim, but we only had sufficient items to use up Shor, Chamor, and Seh. We wanted to know what you do with Gneva and Chayim. So Rav brought us that solution, because Rav says Gneva v'chayim. Amai kama rachmana chayim b'gneva. Why does the Torah use the term chayim in conjunction with gneva? We tell you, achya the keren, the ke'en sheganav. That you should restore the principal amount to the time of the gneva. Now there is a machloket between the Ri, the Rabbeinu Tam, then the Rishonim, as to the purpose here of Rav. When is Rav coming here to say that it's a Chumrah with regards to Karen, that we're trying to get or give back to the Nizak as much as possible. And therefore, when we say here that Achya the Karen means that let's get the Karen to be as robust as possible. And therefore, we assess it Ke'en Sheganav, that you should be Achya. You should restore it to that point. Or maybe it's the Kula to say Achya the Karen Ke'en Sheganav is that we allow you to pay at the time of the Gneva, not for the changes that happen afterwards. And so therefore, the Achya Kikaren is a Kula, that it's not trying to be Machmir on him, but simply to tell you that that's the time period that you do it, even though it turns out to be the Kula. Now, the Baal HaYad Tosafot asks over here, and all the Rishonim are puzzled by this, Rav's statement over here is comprised of two parts. One is that Karen is Ke'en Sheganav, that you pay back the Karen the principal amount based on the time of the theft. And the second component is that the Shlumei Kefel, the Shlumei Arva V'chamisha, is paid Kesha'at Hamada B'din. The proof he brings on the Pasuk is the fact that the principal is paid at the time of the Gneva, and that comes from the word Chayim and Gneva. The bringing of those together teaches us that Achya, the Karen, Ke'en Sheganav, that you should restore the Karen to the point of Gneva. The Mishnah later on in the Masechta, it's an explicit Mishnah that says, Kol HaGazlanim Mishalmim Kesha'at HaGzela, all thieves pay based on the Shatak Zela, the time of theft. So Rav's innovation over here is an explicit Mishnah. So why do I need Rav to teach me a din that's explicitly found in the Mishnah? Or, in other words, what's Rav adding here that we wouldn't have known from the Mishnah? Therefore, the Baal HaYad Tosafot say, Bishlomar d'ika Rav lo atal eshminan el tashlume kefil v'tashlume arba v'chamisha k'shat amad b'din. That the real chiddush in Rav is not the fact that you pay the Karen k'shat g'neva, but rather that you pay Tashlumei Kefil and Tashlumei Arba V'chamisha Kishat Hamada B'din. And that's the additional item, that's the Chiddush of Rav. Now, Faha de Kamar, the Gemara says, what's the reasoning behind Rav? And then it brings a proof to the fact that you bring Karen Kishat Gneva. Seemingly, if the Chiddush of Rav is the fact that you pay Kefil and Arba V'chamisha at the Shat Hamada B'din, the Gemara should be bringing something that proves that point or bolsters that position. But yet we're bringing something that is the source for the fact that you pay kishata gneva. So the Tosafot reads like this: V'hada kamar ma'itam d'rav ishtalume kefil tashlume davar hei kabo'i. According to his shita now, the Tosafot saying the Gemara is asking not why do you pay Karen kishata gneva, but rather how do you know that you pay davar hei or kefil kishata madabedin? V'hachi perusho, and this is the answer of the Gemara: Amar kra gneva v'chayim achiyah the Karen ke'en sheganav. You should restore the Karen to the point of the Gneva. Umashmalai dafka the Karen, velo tashlume dal v'hei. And the limud from that is only the keren is restored from the point of geneva, but not tashlumim dalid vehe. And so therefore it does what says that the answer of the Gemara is not to teach us about the keren itself, but rather it's the diuk that it's unique to the keren that we treat it this way, but tashlumim dalid vehe and kefel are not treated in that manner. The logic to that would seemingly be that why do you pay the gneva k'ein shegazal or k'ein sheganav, and why do you pay the tashlumei kefel or tashlumei dal v'hei k'ein hamada b'din or the time of shat hamada b'din? That is because the point of the paying of the principal amount is compensation, restitution, restoring of value to the individual from whom you stole. So that payment should be connected to the loss that was created b'shata gneva. So therefore, you have to pay k'shata gneva in order to restore that value to him. But then in the kefel and the arba chamisha is not necessarily directly correlated to the loss. Those are penalties, fines that are imposed by the Beit Din. And so therefore, the obligation of those fines really stems from your being in Beit Din, and then Beit Din incriminating you and saying you have to pay those knesot. So then it would make sense that the kefel and the arba v'chamisha are calculated at the time of shat hamada b'din, at the time that you stand in the court, because the court is the one who obligates you in those penalties. It's not the loss that you created. It's the theft that you did, but not connected necessarily to the loss. And these fines are imposed by Beit Din. So therefore, the gneva will be connected to the act of gneva, which is what you have to veshivet agzela, you have to return that, you have to restore that, and the kefel and the dal v'hei will be connected to shat hamada b'din, where the Beit Din itself is the mechanism by which you become chayav in these items, and therefore they're calculated b'shat hamada b'din. So that would be some of the logic behind why you would separate or distinguish between these items, aside from the fact that the pasuk itself tells us that there is such a distinction. Otherwise, we would have thought everything maybe is kishat hamada b'din. But the fact that the pasuk tells us to take the keren back to the shat gneva, we can explain or we can give a reason to why that is the case. Now, Amar Rav Sheshet, Amino, I say, kinayim b'shochi Rav, Amar l'hashmaitadah. While Rav was dozing off, he mentioned this memra. Obviously, what he's saying is, it doesn't make so much sense. And therefore, Rav must have been dozing off, and he said something that was not necessarily right or logical. Titania, kuziyah breitot, or explicit breitot, that seemed to indicate otherwise. Which is, the first breitot is chusha. It was a weaker animal, vishmina. And the ganav went ahead and fattened it up and nursed it back to health. Mishalem tashlume kefel, v'tashlume arba'a v'chamisha, ke'ein sheganav. He pays for kefel and four or five times based on the shat gneva. So again, this is a problem for Rav. Rav says that's true by the keren. That's not true by the kefel, the arba chamisha. Those are paid kshat hamada b'din. Yet the bright explicitly says that they're paid kshat gneva. So Amrei, no, this is an unusual case. Mishum de Amrele, ana p'timna v'ad shakalt. I fattened it up, and you should get the benefit of that. You should be the beneficiary of my fattening up the animal. Meaning that the ganavir invested the money in the animal. Why are the balim entitled to that investment or to that improvement that the ganav put into the animal? It's one thing to say that the ganav has to restore the value. He has to make restitution or compensation. But to suggest that he invests in the animal and then somehow the balim are entitled to those earnings or entitled to that benefit, there's no reason to believe that they are. And therefore, that's why we do it k'ein sheganav, or meaning before the investment was made in the animal, then we charge him at that time, because that was the loss. The benefits that he accrues afterwards, we're not going to give that to the balim, especially when you're talking about kefel and arba v'chamisha. So what there, we're going to accrue through a penalty, meaning that we're making pay double or four or five times. We're going to do that not on top of the principal amount, but on top of the principal amount plus the ganav's investment. That just goes to the benefit of the Baalim, something that they don't necessarily deserve or they don't have a right to. And so for that reason, when we calculate the value of the kefo, the dal v'hei, we do it k'ein sheganav in this case because of the fact that the ganav here invested heavily in the item and we don't want to penalize him. truth is that in other scenarios where a person goes into a friend's field without permission and then invests and does work there, or similarly in any other item where they voluntarily go and do this and they invest money, in the end, we do say that it's not all accruing to the party that did it, but the Balim are entitled to some of this, or they are entitled to some benefit, and they do have to pay the individual. Usually we do, it's the lower of the cost or the benefit that is generated by whatever this individual did, but still they do own a part of that appreciation. So what you have to argue here is why are the Balim not entitled to any of the appreciation, even though in other cases where people trespassed or without permission went ahead and invested in the properties on behalf of the Balim, why over there do we require payment or compensation for the Balim for the lesser of cost or benefit? Because there's a difference in Gneva, Gzela. It's an overarching theme that we're going to see many times, which is Takanat HaShavim, is that we want to encourage people who steal to return the objects. If we put up barriers, if we make it difficult for them to return the items, they won't return the items. So in order to make it easier or to facilitate the ability of a Shivat Gzela Asher Gazal, we make it that even though the Balim might be technically entitled to some of the benefit, we accrue all that benefit to the Ganav, so he simply has to return the principal in order to be Mekayim Beshivat Gzela Asher Gazal, and that'll make it more likely to do tshuva and return the principal amount. So Tashma, Mar says, wait a minute, we have a bright that says Shmeina Vechisha. It was a fat or larger animal, and then he Vechisha, he weakened it. He reduced the size of the animal. So this is the other way, this is negative. So before you can make a claim that when he upgraded the animal, the Balim should not be the beneficiaries of that. But over here where he weakened the animal and now it's worth less, why over there do we not say Kashat HaMadaba Din? Mishalem Tashlume Kefa Tashlume Arba Chamisha Ke Ain Shiganav. Rab would say then you pay Kashat HaMadaba Din, but this Breita says you pay Kefa and Arba Chamisha like the time of the Gneva. It says Hatam Nami Mishum Damrina Lei Malik Tala Kula, Malik Tala Palga. So the Balim can say to the Ganav, what's the difference between you killing it fully and you killing it partially? The way Rashi explains it is that if the animal starts to weaken, or the Ganav here doesn't take care of it or intentionally weakens the animal, then that's the beginning of the process of this animal being shechted. Meaning that the shechita is just the final stage in the killing of the animal. But the starving of the animal, the mistreatment of the animal until that point in time, is leading down the same path as the shechita. And therefore Rashi says that from the moment that you start to weaken it, it's the equivalent, or it's as if you've shechted it at that point. And clearly with shechita, you are konet, the object, and you have to pay for that moment. So Tavir, as soon as he starts to weaken it, then you would pay, or it becomes ke'ein shganav, rather than ke'ein shat hamad abedin. Because by the time that we get to shat hamad abedin, so long after the ganav already has taken possession of it, even as he only took possession of it when he shechted it now, nevertheless, the Gemara says, no, that started a long time ago. That started when he started to weaken the animal, then it already went into his possession. That's the beginning of shechita. That's a partial shechita. What's the difference between killing him by starvation or killing him by shechita? That's the way Rashi describes it and explains the Gemara. The Balei Tosafot don't like Rashi's explanation for a major issue, which is that there's no correlation or connection between the starvation of the animal and the shechita. Balei Tosafot said if the individual, the ganav, actually starved the animal and it died, he wouldn't pay arba v'chamisha, because you only pay arba v'chamisha when you shech the animal. So there's no correlation between the weakening of the animal, the chisha, and the shechita of the animal. And so therefore, why should it be considered that the weakening of the animal is the beginning of shechita? The two have no correlation with each other, and the two do not result in the same din. Therefore, Balei Tosafot say we don't understand what Rashi is saying over here. We don't understand what the connection between these items are. And therefore, they explain it in an alternate fashion, which is, El Hachi Parich, Malikat Lakula, Dein Ochim Batara Damim, Dahashto. What's the difference between if you killed it, kula, totally, that we don't go after the current price, the kana b'shinui, because you acquired it through a shinui, ve'enu shel nigdav, ela batar mi'ikara shehaita shelo, and we only assess the value based on what it originally was, or when it was still in the possession of the other individual, in Ke'enak Neva. The same din should be true when you kill it partially. The same would be true if it weakened by itself. Forget about if the Ganav actively weakened it. But even if it happened itself, the Mishalem Kidami Kara, you would pay based on the original amount. So what the Baalei Tosafot say is that the Gemara is drawing a loose parallel between the two and saying, look, when you shech the animal, it's clear that you don't pay the current value of the animal because there's no Kedahashta now. There's no time period now because the animal shecht, then you were koneh bishinui. So you have to pay for it based on a price or a value that was prior to that point in time. That was kishata gneva. So the Gemara says as well, that is for shechita. It should be no different by huksha, that when you weaken the animal, that's also a form of shinui or beginning of a kinyan that should make it that you can only assess the value from before that point in time, or basically kishata gneva. And Tosafot says that's this, whether the ganav is actively weakening the animal or whether it's happening by itself, that weakening of the animal, if you compare it to shechita, shechita forces you to say that the valuation goes back in time. It goes to the mikara, to the gneva. So too, the beginnings of these processes that will result in the animal's death, so too, they should also compel you to assess the value based on the original value and not the current value. The Ri brings then an alternate view. Vomeri, the matzah nefarish binyan acher. I have another alternative way to view this. But malik tala kula, malik tala palga, klomar. Afilu lamandamar in the shechita labisov, the machloket in the Gemara and Chulin, as to whether shechita is a process, which means that the shechita takes place from the moment you start to cut until you've finished off the rove of the two simanim. Or maybe shechita only happens at that final moment when you get through the second siman or rove of the second siman. That's when the shechita takes effect. So he says, even according to the one who says that ain't shechita labasof, that the shechita only goes into effect at that final moment, v'lo mechayiv dal v'hei ad mashu acharon, and he's not chayav for four or five times until that last second, we don't go after that current time when he's shechting it. That value at that last second. We still look at it all the way back from the beginning of the shechita. So you see here that it's not about that final moment. It's not about that exact moment of shechita. And we say, oh, at that exact moment of shechita, that's the kinyan. And that's when we assess it. We assess it a minute before, a moment before that shechita. We don't say that. We say that even though the shechita is a process which culminates in the actual effective shechita, that last minute, but we still charge you or we only assess the value going before the shechita. So what you see is there's no correlation between the final moment of shechita and the actual requirement to pay from beforehand. And based on that, we can now extrapolate and say, just like shechita, when you start the shechita, it's not called shechita until that final moment. Yet, we still assess the animal from before that point in time. So to over here, hachasha, when you actively start to weaken the animal, that already is the beginning of a process which says that you must assess the value from before the beginning of that weakening process. Just like shechita weakens the animal until there's the final moment of the real shechita. So to over here, if you're weakening the animal, that's as if you've now started a process which says you have to assess the value from before that. According to this reasoning of the he could have set up Rav's case, a case where it happens by itself. Because this is only, in that second answer, it's only when you actively weaken the animal. Either because you begin the shechita, or because you are machishit, that's what generates the obligation to assess the value from before that time. But if the animal is deteriorating by itself, and weakening by itself, there's nothing there that would compel you to forced evaluation before that point in time. Those are three different approaches as to what the answer of the Gemara is over here. So now, Gemara says, Kikama Rav. So now you just eliminated two cases where it's possible for Rav's position to take effect. And in both cases, you say, oh, Rav doesn't disagree necessarily. And there are reasons why these cases in the Braitot are not like Rav's din is because in each case, it's a special scenario. But once you've done that, what have you left for the normal scenario, or where does Rav's din apply? Gemara says, Ki kamar Rav, biyokra bizola hu dikamar. Rav is talking about market fluctuations in the price. Not in the animal changing form, meaning that the value of the animal changed, not because the market price changed, but because the physical animal changed. Either it got bigger, fatter, or it lost weight, or it was weakened. In either of those cases, Rav agrees that you pay kimi kara, even for the tashlume keifel and for the tashlume arba b'chamisha. Where Rav makes a statement with regards to keifel and arba b'chamisha being kashata mada b'din and ganeva from the principal amount from shata ganeva, that's in a case where there's market fluctuations in the price. The animal hasn't changed form at all. The exact same animal is the animal that you're looking at right now. What's happened is either the animal's gone up in value or decreased in value because of the vagaries of the market. So, echidami, what exactly is the scenario? If you say that in the beginning it was worth a zuz at shat gneva, and now when it's hamada b'din, it's worth four, karen ke'ein shekanav, then you pay the karen like when you were gonev. That means that the karen, you will only pay back a zuz. The kefel and the arba b'chamisha, you're going to end up paying kefel, you're going to have to pay double four zuz, you're going to pay four zuz. You'll pay a karen of one zuz, and then a kefel of four zuz. And dalar b'chamisha is the same thing. You'd be multiplying the four number, because that's kishat hamada b'din. That's what would be the suggestion over here. Gemara says, if you read Rav that way, then leba pliga de Rav ad Rabo. That means that Rav is arguing on Rabo. The Gemara itself here, in the entirety of the Gemara's flow, is very interesting, because Rav as an Amora is older than many of these Amoraim, especially Rabo, who is a fifth generation Amora, and Rav was a first generation Amora. Then why is the Gemara questioning, or why does it matter that Rabo disagrees with Rav? Now, the answer might be because Rabba as a Batra will possibly have the Locha be like him, or the fact that we don't want to have a steer between Rabba and Rav, so we have to come up with some way to resolve the two and not have it be that Rav and Rabba are arguing, because that would present us with a position where Rav's statement here is not the Locha. So here the Gemara says, if you explain Rav in this manner, then he's arguing on Rabba, the Amar Rabba. Someone who steals a barrel or pitcher of wine, mechavrei from his friend, mi'ikara shav yezuzah, when he stole it, it was worth a zuz. Obesov shav yadol zuzay, and now it's worth four zuz. The wine price went up. Tavra oshatya, if he breaks the pitcher or barrel and the wine is lost, or he drinks the wine, mishalem dalit, then he pays four. Itvar memela, if the barrel breaks by itself, mishalem zuza, then he pays one zuz. Now, Rabba is speaking about the Karen here. He's not speaking about Tashlume Kefel, Tashlume Dal v'chamisha. That's not Rabba's concern at all. Rabba is simply speaking about the return of the principal amount of Yeshivat Gzela Asher Gazal. And Rabba, within that din of Karen, bifurcates the din and says, if the individual actively destroyed it, either by breaking the container or by drinking it, then he pays kahashto. He pays the current price. On the other hand, if it breaks by itself or it's lost by itself, he pays ke'ein shiganav. The logic is the following, which is that as long as you can return the item that you stole and do ve'shivet gzela asher gazal, then we assume the item is really still in the possession of the owners. Just because the ganav took it out of the possession of the owner, technically it still belongs to the owner. And there's nothing preventing that ownership from happening, except for the fact that the ganav holds on to it and doesn't return it to the baalim. So we assume that the ownership of the baalim is still in place or extant, because there's nothing here that severed the relationship between the baalim and the object. But when the ganav then all of a sudden comes and destroys it, or he drinks it, he's done something so dramatic that he's actually now changed the object to the point where the baalim have lost their ownership over the item. That becomes the moment of gzela, or the moment of gneva. And therefore Rabba says, if that's the point when it's worth four zuz, you're going to pay four zuz then, because it's as if you stole it at that moment. It's not that you stole it before. Before, it just moved. It was in your house, but it belonged to the baalim. The baalim still really owned it. You just took it and moved it to your house. But now that you destroyed it, now that you drank it, there's no way you can return the object. The object's not around anymore. So the Balim's ownership is no longer relevant. That means that the moment you did that, you stole it, or that's the point of the Geneva. And that's why you pay Kidahashto. You pay the based on the price today. On the other hand, when it is Memela, when it breaks Memela and happens by itself, then that loss of the object had nothing to do with the Ganav himself. And so the only thing that we can assign to him, or the only fault or blame we can assign to him, is the fact that he took it out of the property of the Balim. And so in that instance, he's going to pay the Kidmi Kara, or Keshata Gneva, because he was not, he did nothing besides that. That's where he was wrong, or that's where he's guilty, is for taking it out of the possession of the Balim. And since nothing else happened besides that, then he's Chayav, because Keshata Gneva, and he pays the zuz based on that shata gneva. Point at which he did something that caused the problem, if he actively destroys it, either by drinking it or by breaking it, then that's the moment or the point in time that he becomes culpable for it. On the other hand, if the damage happens by itself, it breaks, the barrel bursts by itself, or the wine spilled out by itself, then the ganav, what he did wrong, or what he is culpable for, is the fact that he moved it from the owner's house into his possession. And so therefore he pays Keshata Gneva or Keshata Gzela. And that's the distinction here. So now that's a problem for Rav, because Rav says when it comes to Karen, you always pay Keshata Gneva, you don't pay Kedahashto. So in order not to have a steer between Rav and Rabba, we're going to assume that Rav agrees to this position of Rabba. Kikama Rav. So then where is the scenario where Rav applies? Kagon Dimikara Shavya Dalid, Ulusov Shavya Zuza. That originally it was worth 4, and now it's worth 1. Karen ke ancient ganav. The Karen you pay like the original theft. You pay the 4 zuz. Tashlume kefil, but tashlume arba v'chamisha, kashata mata bedin. The tashlume kefil and arba v'chamisha are based on the price today, which is the lower price, which is the 1 zuz price at the current time. And this goes back to what we said before. The Ravid, I think, articulates it as well, that the difference between the shat gnevav for the Karen is because there you're trying to restore value, you're trying to compensate for the loss. The penalties of the knesot, the kefel, and the tashlumi arba chamisha are associated with beit din. And therefore, their assessment is only at the time that you are in the beit din or b'shat hamada b'din. And so therefore, even though there'll be a reduction in the knesot because of that, that's exactly what happens, because the knesot are you're not chayav for until you end up in beit din, and beit din incriminates you. Whereas for the Karen or the return of the principal, you're chayav right away as soon as you take it. And therefore, that's assessed based on shata gneva. So that means that we've now narrowed the case in which Rav's din applies. It only applies to market variations in the price. And now it only applies to market variations in the price where there was a depreciation, where the value went down. So in a case where the market price moved and it depreciated, that's where Rav tells us that Keshata Gneva for the principal, and Keshata Mada Bedin for Tashlume Kefel and Tashlume Arba'a V'chamisha. So Tani Rabbi Chanina L'suyei D'Rav. So Rabbi Chanina brings a bright or a Tanaic work that is supportive of Rav's position. Balabait Sheta'an Tanat Ganav V'Pikadon. He makes a claim that the object that he was watching, the deposit that was with him, was stolen. V'nishba. And then he takes a shvua to that effect. And then afterwards, he admits that he was lying. Ubahu edim. And edim show up to also testify to the fact that he stole it. If he admitted to lying and to taking the item and taking the shvua falsely, then mishalem karen, v'chomesh v'asham. Then he pays the karen. He's got to repay the principal. He pays the chomesh, a fifth, which is really 25%, is a quarter of the principal amount, the asham, and he has to bring the asham gzelot. So again, we discussed this the other day, which is that in Vayikra, hey, Perakei, there's a parsha of asham gzelot. In that parsha, it says that in an individual who is mal b'ashem and kichesh b'amito, he denies something, whether it's pikadon, which is our scenario over here, tzumet yad, o begazel, o ashaket admito, any monetary transaction between parties where he denies what he owes or denies having to repay or give back an item. And he takes a false oath to that effect. If that's the case, Veshivet Agzela Asher Gazal. He has to return if he's found guilty. I mean, that he admits to his guilt. That's not found here in this parshiyah, as we mentioned before. That's found in the beginning of Naso, where it talks about Gezel Ager. Over there, the complementary parshiyah that deals with Gezel Ager, it says over there, Vidvada, that he admits to it. So in his admission that incriminates himself, then Meshivat Gzela Asher Gazal, Oet Osha Kasher Ashak, Oet Abigadon Shef Kedito, Oet Aveda Shef Matzah. He's got to return the object that he stole. Number one. And then it says, O Mikola Shechavala of the Sheker, Vishilam Oto Birosho. He pays for the principal amount. The Rosho means the principal, the Karen. Vichamishita Vyosef Alav. And he has to add on an additional fifth. Lasher Hulo, to the party who it belongs to. Nenu Beyom Ashmato. Vet ashamo yavil Hashem, and then he has to bring an asham, and asham gzelot. Ayil tamim minatzom berkachal asham elakoin, and he brings the asham to be his kapara. So through his own admission, he has to obviously return a shivat gzel asher gazal. He has to pay a chomesh, and he has to pay asham. V'im mishu bau edim hodeh, if he only admits after the edim incriminate him, then he, first of all, mishalem tashlomei kefel. He's going to pay kefel because he's too late. Had he admitted beforehand, he wouldn't have to pay kefel. Kefel's a knas, and modeh b'knas is patur. But the kefel was already imposed on him, or he was incriminated by these edim, and so therefore his hoda'ah over here will not protect him. On the other hand, his hoda'ah still is valuable or meaningful for the case of the asham gzelot. And therefore, hodeh mishalem tashlumei kefel, ve'asham. And he has to bring an asham. V'chomsho, olo lo b'kfelo, divrei Yaakov. And his chomesh, the simple way to read this, or the easiest way to read this, is subsumed inside of the kefel. That is what Rabbi Yaakov says. So, Rashi makes a claim over here, which the Balei HaTosafot are somewhat suspect of. Rashi says over here that it only works where the chomesh and the kefel are exactly equal. So that if one quarter of the principal is equal to two times the principal, then that works, and the chomesh and the kefel will cover each other. Obviously, that's an impossibility for you to have something that is two times the principal amount equal to one quarter of the principal amount. So we'll come back. The Gemara will come back to this and show that this is a proof to Rav's position. But Rashi says over here that that's the only case where it's true. The Balei HaTosafot say, how does Rashi know that? The simple reading of this is that the chomesh is subsumed in the kefel. And so when you pay two times, then you've also paid a quarter over the amount. A quarter is just a 25% of the doubling of the principal amount. So if you're paying kefel, you also paid a chomesh. So that's the first thing that the Balei HaTosafot would say. But they say, oh, but Rashi explains his position, and this is the explanation for Rashi. Rashi says that the chomesh has to be nikar. The chomesh has to be clear and defined, because the chomesh is a kapara. The kefel is a knas, which is a fine. The chomesh is a kapara. So the chomesh has to be segregated or distinct in order for you to work as a kapara. So that's why Rashi demands that the chomesh be equal to the kefel. Otherwise, it's not clear that you have a chomesh. So the Balei HaTosafot say, okay, I accept Rashi's position here that it has to be a chomesh and a distinct chomesh. But he can do that by simply segregating the money. And he can say, 25% of what I'm paying here, that's the chomesh. The other 75% brings you up to the kefel amount. So if he did that, if he specified it, he verbally designated the quarter to be the chomesh, it should work, according to the Balei HaTosafot. So you say, where did Rashi get this from, that it has to be equal, that the kefel and the chomesh have to be equal? So in the end, the Balei HaTosafot default to the language of the Tosefta or the Braita, where Riva Mifaresh, the Lashon Braita Kaparech, the Mashma, the Chomsho Oleh B'chol Kfelo, that the language there sounds much more that the chomesh is the kefel, meaning that the two are equal. And so that's what Tosfot says over here. Even our language over here, lashon bikfelo, that means in his kefel, doesn't make it sound like he's designating the chomesh separate from the kefel, like a quarter here and 75% there. It sounds like his chomesh is subsumed or a part of the kefel. But the only way that could work and it still be distinct is if the chomesh and the kefel are equal. That is the position of Rabbi Yaakov. Chamim omrim, Birosho v'chamishitav. The pasuk says that if you pay the principal amount, then you pay the fifth. Mamon amishtalem birosh mosif chomesh. If you only are paying keren, then you pay the fifth. Mamon jamishtalem birosh. If you're not paying the keren, meaning that you're paying kefel, you're paying something in excess of that, ein mosif chomesh. Chomesh is not applicable according to the chachamim. The two are mutually exclusive. You're either paying kefil or you're paying chomesh. You're paying kefil, that means that you're not chayev in chomesh because then you're not paying rosho. You're not just paying principal amount. If you're not paying kefil and you are paying the rosho, just the karen back, then you will be chayev in the chomesh. But the two are mutually exclusive, so you're never going to be paying kefil and chomesh at the same time. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai agrees with the Chachamim's position. He just adds an additional item, which is that not only do you not bring the chomesh when you're not paying the principal amount, you also don't bring the Hashem Gzelot. So the Chachamim say that, oh, if you pay kefil, then of course you paid back the principal amount. You don't pay the chomesh because of the Gzeret HaKatuv that juxtaposes it or ties it to the payment of the principal amount only. So chomesh is out of the question, but you still bring the Hashem Gzelot. You still bring the korban. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai goes and says one step further. He says, if you're paying kefil, which means you're patur from the chomesh, if you're patur from the chomesh, you're also patur from the asham. And that has to do, we're going to see, the Gemara is going to explain why that is the case. But basically, he connects the asham to the chomesh and says that they have the same din. Right, so now, the Gemara goes back, tries to now decipher that position of Rabbeinu Yaakov, which is the fact that the chomesh and the kefil are equal. Tani mihat, chomsho lo lo bikfeilo, divrei Rabbi Yaakov. Hey chidami. How do you have a scenario in which 2 times the principal amount equals 25% times the principal amount? Ilema demi kara shavya dalid ublisov shavya arba'a. If it was worth 4 when he stole it, and it's worth 4 now when he comes to the din, chumsho lolo bikfelo, how could it be that the chumash equals the kefil? Kfela arba'a. Kefil is going to be 4 zuz. The chumsha zuza. And the chumash, again, the chumash means chumash milabar, which in the Gemara terms means that after you've added in the additional item, it's 1/5, which it means that it's a quarter, 25%. When you have 4 zuz, then it would be 1 zuz, would be the chomesh. Elalav, what's the scenario here? Dimikara shavya arba'a. The time of the gneva was worth 4. Obasov shavya zuza. And at the end, it was worth a zuz at the shata madabedin. The kfela, if you assess the kfela at the time of shata madabedin, then it's 1 zuz, because that's the value at the time that Hamad Abedin. The Chumshe is also zuza, because the Chomesh is assigned or assessed based on Shata Gneva. Shata Gneva was worth 4. So now you have a case where the Chomesh and the Kefa are going to be equal. Alma, that's only true if you say, Karen Ke'en Sheganav, Tashlume Kefa, Tashlume Arba Chamisha, Kshata Hamad Abedin. It only is if you basically create the case here, similar to what Rav told us, that the principal amount is assessed or determined by the Shat HaGneva. The kefil is determined by Shat Hamad Abedin. If you create that segregation between them, you actually can come up with a scenario in which the kefil will equal the chomesh, because we will assess the chomesh based on the Shat HaGneva. That was 4 zuz. A quarter of that is 1 zuz. And we'll assess the kefil based on the Shat Hamad Abedin. And Shat Hamad Abedin was worth 1 zuz. Kefil is another zuz. Then you have your chomesh and your kefil being equal to 1 zuz. And in that scenario, we can have exactly what Yaakov describes. Your chomesh is equal to your kefil, but it only is the true if we follow the position of Rav. Now, the Baalei HaTosafot ask over here, why is the Gemara so sure that this is the scenario? Why isn't it possible that it's just the opposite? That we'll say that it was originally worth a zuz, and now it's worth 4 zuz. And now you'll reverse it. You'll say kefil is paid kshat gneva. And the principal is paid kshat hamad abedin. And then this braita would not be a proof to Rav. It actually be a proof that just the opposite of Rav. That kefil is paid kein hagneva, and chomesh is paid, or the principal is paid kshat hamad abedin. Why is the Gemara so sure that the scenario is like what we described over here, and it's supportive of Rav? You could have answered and said just the opposite, flipped the gneva and the karen as to when they pay. And then you'll come up with the same answer, but just the opposite of what Rav's din is. Tosafot rejects this fundamentally and says, "Vishlamar, the lekala meimar hachi klal." You can't say this. The mehechi teite, the karen yehe kashat hamad abedin. Why would you ever think that you have to pay the karen based on the time that you go to court? Kefil dal vehe yehe ke'en sheganav. And dal vehe will be at the time that you took the item or the theft. De'en lechalek ben kefil dal vehe le karen im lo mikoach pasuk. There's no reason to separate or segregate the din of kefil and dal vehe from that of the principal amount of the gneva, except for the fact that you have a gzeirat hakatuv. You have a pasuk that tells you otherwise. Ubzeh ein lanu shum pasuk. We have no pasuk that indicates to us that you should pay the kefil kshat hagneva. and you should pay the principal amount, kishata mado bedin. We don't have any evidence of that. We have no pasuk that indicates that. And so therefore, we don't even have a havamina to speculate or suggest that, because it makes no sense to separate the din of kefel from that din of the gneva itself, the principal amount itself. Elaim kein, you have a pasuk, and that's exactly what Rav has. Rav only makes his chiluk because of the fact that the pasuk compels him to say that he has to be mechayet to keren, that he has to bring the keren ke'ein sheganav. And because of that, there's only one way that the Gemara sees as a plausible explanation for Rabbi Yaakov's position, and that explanation is supportive of Rav. And that's what Tani Rabbi Chanina, that Rabbi Chanina brings, or this Braita that is brought here, is supportive of Rav's position. Rava now says that doesn't have to be the case, because we can come up with a scenario that explains Rabbi Yaakov's position without being a support for Rav. Amar Rava, Olam Dimikara, Shavya Arba, Vashtanami Shavya Arba. The scenario here is where it was worth 4 zoos originally, and it's still worth 4 zoos. The kakasha, kfela, dalid, bechumshe, zuza. Didn't you say before then, if you calculate it that way, then the kefel is 4 zoos. And the chomesh, which is 25%, is 1 zuz. Hachabayaskina, kugon shenishba, bechazar venishba. He takes a false shvua that he doesn't owe the money, and then he admits to it. He takes a second false shvua, and he admits to it. He repeats this 4 times. He does that, then he's paying kefel, because after 4 times, he's paying 4 times 25%. He's basically paying kefel. Arba pamim, v'hodeh, he does this 4 times and admits to it. V'torah amra, and the Torah says, v'chamishitav, which is the pasuk says, with regards to, oto birosho v'chamishitav. So it doesn't say, v'chumsho or v'chamisho, which means it's chomesh, but rather chamishatav, which means, chamishiot shelo. It's many fifths. So atarah ripta chamishiot harbe b'keren achat. The Torah here says that you could have multiple fifths on the same keren. Now the truth is, the Gemara brings this drasha many places in Shas. Whenever it brings it in Shas, is to teach you that if you, for instance, person denies owing money, and then he admits that he took a false shvua to that effect, then he has to pay chomesh. So then, if he afterwards denies that he owes the chomesh and takes the shvua to that effect, then he will pay a chomesh on the chomesh. And so on and so forth, until you get down to a pruta, or less than a pruta, where he can't take a shvar, where he's not going to repay it. But that is the, usually what this gemara is used, this limud, or this drush is used for, to teach you, you can pay a chomesh on a chomesh on a chomesh. Here, the gemara is learning from it that, on the same keren, you can pay chomesh multiple times, if you lie about that principal amount, and take a false shvua 4 times, you're going to pay those 4 times, or those multiple times. Obviously, it has to be a case where he's doing this in different locations or different batei dinim, because once he's already been caught lying under oath, we don't believe him under oath anymore. He doesn't have a right to take a shvua anymore because he's chukzak kafran. He's a person who denies owing money and takes shvua to that effect. So over here, if he took a shvua and then he admits the fact that it was a false shvua, then we're not going to accept another shvua from him. So it must be that he's going to a different beit din or a different location and doing this, or doing this thing again. And that way, Rava says you can come up. It's not a easy scenario. It's not a everyday scenario. But there are scenarios where you can come up that the chomesh equal the kefel for Rabbi Yaakov, even though it's not supportive of Rav, or it's not the principles that Rav laid out for us. So Amar Mar. Now the Gemara goes back and wants to discuss the machlok between the Chachamim, Rav Shimon bar Yochai. What is the shorish machloki between them? So Amar Mar, v'chachamim omrim, birosho v'chamishitav. It says birosho and then chamishitav. Mamon ha-mishtalein birosh, mosif chomesh. When you're paying principal, you add on a fifth. Mamon she'im mishtalein birosh, when you're not just paying principal, in case where you're paying kefel, or you're not paying principal at all, ein mosif chomesh, then you don't add on a fifth. Aval ha-sham maiti, but you bring the asham. The asham's not mentioned in that pasuk, so therefore, the Hashem is not tied to this drosha of the Karen. Maishna chomesh delo mishalem, dichtiv, because the pasuk says, birosho v'chamishitav. So the juxtaposition of the two tells us that the Karen triggers the chomesh. Hashem nami lo mishalem, so the Hashem also you shouldn't have to pay, the haktiv, birosho v'chamishitav, ve'et Hashemo. Now here the Gemara is doing a little cut and paste job. It's not really giving you the psukim and the whole psukim. It's giving you like dot, dot, dot. And then leading you into the next piece, which is, the pasuk reads, O mikol ha'sheyishavah lav la sheker, Vishilam oto birosho v'chamishitav yosef alav, which is what we've been quoting until now. Lasher hu lo yitnenu b'yom hashmato. That's what the Gemara left out. The next pasuk begins ve'et hashamo yavi l'ashem. So the Gemara just did that and brought the cut the hashamo and brought it up to be juxtaposed or adjacent to vishilam oto birosho v'chamishitav ve'et hashamo. So therefore, the hasham should be subject to the same requirements or qualification of the chomesh, just like there. It's subject or connected to the Karen, so too the Hashem should be connected to the Karen. And the Charabanon et paskei kra. The fact that it moved to a new pasuk and says ve'et Hashemo, et tells you that we're already separating. This is a new din, not connected to the previous dinim. Rabbi Shimba Yochai, what is he going to do? The Chachamim explain their position. How is Rabbi Shimba Yochai going to connect the Hashem back to the Karen? He says, because it says ve'et. Arve Kra. Psukim joined them together. So the Chachamim focus on the word et as being a mafsik and changing the topic basically or disconnecting it from what was before. Rav Shimba Yochai focuses on the vav achibor, the pasuk begins, ve'et Hashemo. So that vav achibor connects it back to the previous pasuk, which is speaking about the Karen and the Chomesh. V'rabbanan amelecha lo tichtov rachmana lo vav v'lo et. If Rabbi Shimon's right, then I have a simpler solution. Don't write the word et, and don't write the letter vav, the chibor, and we would have automatically correlated between the items and known that they were connected. So why do you have to write et and then the vav to basically create a hefsek and then unwind the hefsek through the vav? Just save yourself some time and don't put the et in there at all. And then we would have known the same thing. Shemaychai will respond. Et lo sagya de lo kotov. It's not possible to write that pasuk without the word et in it. Vafsuke ben mamon gavoa, the mamon hejot. Because the pasuk needs to segregate between money that goes to the ba'alim and money or value that goes to a kodesh baruch hu. And that is because the requirement or the repayment of the keren and the chomesh, as the pasuk says at the end, lasher hu lo yitnenu b'yom hashmato. When he is found guilty, when he incriminates himself, he pays it to the person who the object belonged to originally. Then, ve'et ha'shamo yavi la'shem. The Hashem zelot isn't given back to the original owner. Ve'et ha'shamo yavi la'shem is a korban la'shem. So that value goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Hashem goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the word et was necessary there to separate between that which goes to the balim or to the lay people and that which belongs or goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it was necessary to write the word et. Well, now if it's necessary to write the word et, then, Hilka Chatavav Arve the Kra. That's why the Psukim brought a Vav on top of that. The Ed was necessary and had to be there, but they put a Vav on top of it in order to be Mechaber, to connect between the Rosho, the Chamishitav, and the Hasham, to tell you when there's no Karen, no Chomesh, no Hasham, according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Right now we have a new statement by another Amora, Amar Rabbi Yilon. Ganav Tzle Venase Ayo. He steals a sheep, and Nasa Ayil becomes a ram. Egel steals a calf, Venasa Shor, and becomes an ox. Nasa Shinui Biado Bikano. That maturation, that change from the animal going from being a youngster to an adult, that is a Shinui that gives the Ganav a Kinyan in the item. Why does that matter? Because Tavachu Machar, if he afterwards then is shechting it or selling it, then he is shalohu toveach, shalohu mocher. He's shechting his own item, and he's selling his own item. I mean that he took possession of it. He still has to give it back. He's still veshivat gzeilah shir gazal. He's responsible to repay the owners, but he now becomes the owner of the item through the shinui. If he performs the shinui in the animal over here, where the shinui happens by itself because of the aging of the animal, that shinui puts it in his possession. Once it's in his possession, then whatever he does to it is he's doing it to his own animal. So if he shechs it or sells it, then he's not going to be subject to four or five times because he did it to his own animal, not to the animal that he stole. The animal he stole is gone now. It now belongs to him. So now, Etavei Rabbi Chanina, the Rabbi Yilo. Rabbi Chanina challenged this position, Rabbi Yilo. Ganav tle v'nase ayo, egel v'nase shur. Exact scenario that Rabbi Yilo brought down. Mishalem teshlumei kefel v'teshlumei arba'a v'chamisha ke'ein sheganav. He pays kefel and four and five times based on the time of the Gneva, the original Gneva. If what you said is correct, Rabbi Yilo, then he should have made a kinyan at the time of the shinoi. Amai mishalein. Why does he have to pay kefel or arba'a chamisha at all? Shalohu toveach, shalohu mocher. It all belongs to him because he has a kinyan through the shinoi, and that kinyan through the shinoi makes it his, and then anything that happens afterwards or subsequent to that is not done to the stolen item, it's to his item. So when he shechs it or sells it, it's not under the rubric of arba v'chamisha. So this braita seems to say just the opposite of what you said, Rabbi Yehuda. This braita doesn't see any kinyan here by the mere fact that it's obligating you to pay tashlumei kefel and arba v'chamisha from Merlei Velamai. So Rabbi Yehuda says back to him, okay, let's go with your idea. What are you going to suggest? Shinoi lo kani, that change in the maturation of the animal doesn't call the shinoi. It's not a kinyan. Amai mishalem kein sheganav. Then why is he paying based on the original gneva time? Mishalem ki hashto. He should pay based on the present time. Maybe that we saw this before, that if ganav steals something and then it's in his possession, it still belongs to the balim while it's in his possession until he does something actively to change that status quo. So what the Gemara is saying is, wait a minute, if you say there's no shinoi over here, the ganav had no kinyan. If he had no kinyan, then only at the time that the shchita or whatever happens, that's when the obligation should start. That's when the kinyan happens, and that's when we should assess the value. So he says back to him, Rabbi Chanina says back to Rabbi Yilah, that's not a fair question. What's the reason that he doesn't pay based on the current value, but rather at shat ganeva? Because the ganav can say to the balim, Torah ganvi mincha? I stole an ox from you? Dichra ganvi mincha? I stole an isle from you? That's not what I stole. I stole a sheep. I stole a calf. Well, since I stole a sheep or a calf, that's what I'm going to repay you. Why should I be paying you an ox? Or why should I be paying you a ram if that's not what I stole? This goes back, Fred, to your question, which is, wait a minute. That's very nice that he stole a sheep or he stole a calf. But then the animal naturally appreciates or grows or matures. And so why is the ganav not responsible for that change in the animal? Even if there's no shinui, but that's the natural movement of the animal, he should be responsible for that change. Just like if you said the wine ages, well, it's holding on to it, he should be responsible for that appreciation in value. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says back to him, Amalei, Rachmana nitzlan mehai data. God should save us from people who think like you, because it's just not the proper way. So Amalei, so Rabbi Chanina says back to Rabbi Yehuda, not to be outdone, Adarabba, Rachmana nitzlan midata didach. God should save us from you and people like you. So obviously there is a fundamental machloket here between them, and that fundamental machloket makes it impossible for each of them to accept the other one's opinion, which is that clearly Rabbi Yehuda believes that there is a shinoi over here. And since there is a shinoi, therefore there is a kinyan. If there's a kinyan, and anything that happens afterwards is as if you did it to your own item. The problem with that is, and this is probably what bothers Rabbi Chanina about Rabbi Yehuda's position, is if you believe that there was a shinoi, if you believe there was a kinyan, then yes, when he's toveach o mocher, he's toveach shalo o mocher shalo, but why is the payment kashata gneva? Why is it done back at the time of the gneva if it happened, the kinyan happened now? Or whenever you took possession of it, meaning that whenever that shinoi took place, that's when the change happened. That should be the point of theft, and that should be when you pay. The fact that you're paying kashata gneva shows you that that's not the case. So therefore, Rabbi Chanina is unwilling to accept Rabbi Yehuda because the shinoi makes it that he shouldn't have to pay for the toveach u'mecher, but the shinoi should also drive the point of valuation, which is that should be the point of theft. Not going back to the original theft, because the original theft wasn't more the trigger point at the time of the shinoi. So for that reason, Rabbi Chanina is unwilling to accept Rabbi Law's position that the shinoi works over here. On the other hand, Rabbi Chanina believes that you pay kishata gneva because that is the point at which things happened. There was no shinoi after that point, just because it grew up, there's no shinoi. And as we said before, in Rabba's position, when there is no shinoi, then the only time period or the only act that the person's guilty for is taking it out of the possession of the balim. And that happened all the way in the beginning, b'shat ha-gneva. And that's what you're chayav for. Rabbi Yehuda is unwilling to accept that because he says, wait a minute, you stole an item and now it accrued value in the possession of the Baalim because it never left their possession, why shouldn't you be liable for that? Why shouldn't you be responsible for that accretion in value, which happened by itself? And so each one of them is unwilling to accept the other one's position. Now, as Rashi points out over here, this braita is also a problem for Rav. This braita is not just a problem for Rabbi Ilah, it's also a problem for Rav, because this braita says you pay kefel or arba v'chamisha kishata gneva. And that's a problem for Rav. Now, for Rabbah, this would not be a problem, because Rabbah, if you remember back on the Amud Aleph, only addressed Karen. He only spoke about the Karen. We have no idea what he says about Tashlumei Kefel or Tashlumei Arba V'Chamisha. That's what Rabbah could say over here. This Braita only spoke about Kefel and Arba V'Chamisha because it didn't want to speak about Karen, because the din by Karen would be different. And so Rabbah could answer or avoid it being a stira to this Braita. But just like this Braita is a problem for Rabbi Ilah, this Braita is also a problem for Rav, which the Gemara will have to address later on. Okay, fine. I accept the fact that maybe there's no shinoi that happened here when it went from being a calf to a ox, or it went from being a sheep to a ram, because that all happened naturally. It's a natural progression of the animal. But the animal changed because its name changed. It before was called a sheep, now it's called a ram. It before was called a calf, now it's called a cow, or it's called an ox. That's a change in the animal. That shinui hashem should be enough to create the acquisition. So Marava, Rava says it's not true. Shor ben yomo karoi shor. An ox, meaning a calf, from day one, is called a shor. Ayo ben yomo karoi ayo. A ram is a ram from day one. So even though technically the babies have separate names, like a keves, a sheep, or they have a calf, an eagle as a name, that doesn't mean that the description of shor or ayol is not applicable to them as well. And the Gemara is going to prove that. Shor ben yomo karoi shor dechtiv shor o kesef o eiz ki valeid. If you give birth to a kesef, an eiz, or a shor. What do you mean you gave birth to a shor? That means that it's called a shor from day one. Ayol ben yomo karoi ayol. The ram is also a terminology that's used for a day-old sheep. Dechtiv veleid zoncha lo achalti. When Yaakov is saying to Lavan how much or how hard he worked, he says, I didn't take any of your rams. I didn't eat a single one of your rams. Elim hulu lo achal, kvasim achal. What type of statement is that? I didn't take any of your rams, but I did take your sheep. Obviously, when he says, I didn't take any of your rams, he means I didn't take any of your rams or your sheep. So you see, the word ayo is covering not only rams, but also sheep. So you see, alav shvamina, from this you see, ayo ben yomo karu ayo. You see that even an ayo from day one is called an ayo. The Baal Tosafot point out a problem with that and say that, yes, that's true, but where the Torah specifies otherwise, then you have to take that to heart. The Torah tells you you have to be a keves ben shana as a korban. You can't bring an ayo instead. It's clear that the word ayo means something in its second year of life, according to the Torah for korbanot. And there the Torah distinguishes between keves and ayo. And there it's meaningful, that distinction. The keves means you can only bring a one-year-old animal. Ayo means you can only bring a two-year-old animal, or something beyond 13 months to 24 months. So that distinction does exist, but it doesn't mean that we've wiped out the differences between these, but simply it means that the shinui hashem is not sufficient here, because the name ayo, can it be applicable or applied even to the keves, even though it's not necessarily used that way, or not always used that way, it still has application there. Keves is just a subset of ayo. Egel is just a subset of par or para. And so for that reason, there's no shinui hashem here. So not only is there no shinui, there's no shinui hashem. And so neither of those exist. Even if you didn't believe, like Rabbi Yilad, that there's a shinui, maybe you could have said there's a shinui hashem. But here, the Gemara dispels that and says there is no shinui hashem. So the Gemara here is not rejecting fundamentally that shinui hashem is a shinui, but rather simply saying that these scenarios here, or these cases here, are not considered to be shinui. The Gemara later on in the Masechta will deal with shinui hashem as to whether that is sufficient shinui in order to make a kinyan or not to make a kinyan. Mikom makom kasha. Nevertheless, it's still a problem for Rabbi Ilah. The Braita is problematic for Rabbi Ilah. How is he going to deal with the Braita? It's one thing for him to take a knock at Rabbi Chanina and say your logic doesn't make sense, but he still has to explain the Braita. What is he going to do with the Braita? Amrav Sheshet, Hamani Beit Shammai. Who's the author of that Braita? It's Beit Shammai. Dame Shinoi Bimkomo Omedet Velokani. that even when there's a change in the object, that doesn't generate a kinyan for the individual. The item remains out of your possession even after a shinoi. The Tanya of a Braita, not on la bet nana, if he pays the harlot her service fee, if he gives her chitim, he gives her wheat, basan solet, and then she makes him into flour. Zeitim, he gives her olives, basan shemen, and she makes them into oil. Anavim, he gives her grapes, basan yayin, and she makes them into wine. Now, an etnan zona, anything that is exchanged for the services of a harlot, those items that are the payment or the consideration cannot be brought on the Mizbeach. They are asur to be brought into Mikdash and used on the Mizbeach. So now, these items that the person paid for the services of the zonah with, whether it's the chitin, the zeitim, or the anavim, they cannot be brought on the Mizbeach. Tani chada, we have one bright that says asur, even after these changes take place, you're still not allowed to bring them on the Mizbeach. Tani chada mutar. There's another bright that says that if these changes take place, then you can bring them on the Mizbeach. It's clear that the mutar is because the object that you have now is not the same object that you had before. Chitim is not solet. Solet is a change, a dramatic and irreversible change in the object. And so because of that, that change makes it into a new item. It's no longer the etnan zona. She has done work or done something significant to this and changed it to the point where it's no longer the chitim she was paid. It's no longer the olive she was paid. It's no longer the grape that she's paid. And therefore, it's mutar to put on the mizbeach. V'amar Rav Yosef, Tani Guryon demi Aspork. So Guryon demi Aspork told us about this stira in the Braitot. Beit Shammai Osrim or Beit Hillel Matirim. There's actually a machlok in Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is whether shinoi is significant enough or changes the object to the point where it's no longer the original object. Beit Hillel says, yes, that's the case. Beit Shammai says, no, that's not the case. My time of the Beit Shammai, what's the reasoning of Beit Shammai? Dichtiv, gam, rabot, shinuyehem. The word gam, which appears in the pasuk by the etnat zona, is a ribui that tells you not only is the etnan problematic, but even shinuyehem, even things or changes to that object, are still problems of etnan zona. Beit Hillel, heim, velo shinuyehem. It says that those objects are problematic, but not things that changed. Heim is a mirut. Ubet Shemai, Hau Haim. What do they do with that word, Haim? Haim, Velo Vladotehem. It's them and not their offspring. Their offspring already are cleared to go on the Mizbeach. They're no longer considered to be Etnan Zuna. So, Haim, Velo Vladotehem, Hu Da'ata. That's what you use the word Haim for. Beit Hillel, Tarte Shmat Mina. They learn both things out of the word Haim. The word Haim is meaningful, means them and not. But them and not what? Haim velo shinuyehem, haim velo avalotehem. You're able to say both of those. Both of those can come out of that same miut because it says only they are considered to be etnan. That means that a vlad is not. That means that a shinui is not. So what you see from here is that there's a machlok between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai as to whether shinui is a strong enough or significant enough item to create a kinyan or to change the object so it's no longer the original object. Beit Hillel says yes, Beit Shammai says no. And so what Rabbi Yehuda is going to say is the author of the Braita that was problematic for him was authored by Beit Shammai. And that's why Beit Shammai thinks that shinuim are not significant enough to change the status of the item. Beit Hillel aktiv gam. Wait a minute, Beit Hillel also has the word gam. Gam the Beit Hillel kasha. You're right. Gam for Beit Hillel is a problem. We don't have a drosha. We don't know what to do with that word gam. And that is a problem for the shita of Beit Hillel. The Baal HaTosafot make a point over here that the Gemara later on has other psukim to learn this idea out that shinoi is koneh, or that when the object changes, that it's not the same object. So, Baal HaTosafot, question. Here we have a source from Etnan Zona. How come Rabba later on, or Rabbi Yochanan Oel, seem to bring other sources for this fact? So the Baal HaTosafot say that there are two different types of shinuim, and the question is, about those shinuim, what do we hold? So now, there are Amoraim, seemingly they're going to be arguing on Beit Hillel, who say that shinoi is not koneh. So how could they argue on Beit Hillel? So Tosafot splits or segregates the din and says that there's a shinoi she'enu chuzer lebriyato, so a change that cannot be reversed. It's an irreversible change, like what we have here, which is chitim to solet, zeitim to olive oil, anavim to yayin. Those are irreversible changes. That's the source here in the pasuk, and that's what Beit Hillel refers to. That type of shinoi is enough of a shinoi that it's no longer the original item, and all the Amoraim agree to that. Where the Amoraim are bringing psukim later on, or where they're arguing, seemingly like on Beit Hillel, and saying shinui is not koneh, is in a case where it's a shinui hachuzer lebriato, a shinui that can be reversed. It's a change, but it is a reversible change. So that reversible change, does it have the same status as an irreversible change? And therefore it's a shinui and it's koneh. And we need a pasuk to include that, because had we only had one pasuk, we'd only included irreversible changes, we wouldn't have included reversible changes, so you need a second pasuk for that. Or if there's an Amora who argues, he's not arguing on Beit Hillel, he agrees. When it's a change that's irreversible, that is a real change. But a change that can we go back to its original state, that's not called change. And so therefore that would not be koneh. So when it says, Adkan lo plige, Ray Rashi reads this, Adkan lo plige means, there's no machloket here between Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Ilah, except for Elo de Marsava Shine Koneh, Marsava ain't Shinui Koneh. The only difference between them is whether Shinui is Koneh or not Koneh. But they both agree, Avalinian Shlume Kuliyama Mikara Mishalim. They both agree that you pay Kishata Gneva, and you pay based on the original time period, the original Gneva. So that's the way Rashi reads it. The other Rishonim are bothered by that explanation because, first of all, the Gemara here is saying that this is a problem for Rav, and now you're bringing two Amoraim who are much later Amoraim and questioning Rav from their position. So that doesn't make so much sense. Number two is when the Gemara says that it spoke about Tanaim in a whole case here, and then it's all of a sudden going back and jumping back to Rabbi Ilah and Rabbi Chanina. So there are those that explain here that when it says Adkan lo plige, this is referring to Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So Adkan lo plige, Ella, the Marsav Shinoi Kuneh, Marsav Ein Shinoi Kuneh. The difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is simply in the drush of the psukim as to whether Shinoi is Kuneh or Shinoi is Eino Kuneh. That's the difference between them. But, Aval Inyan Shlume, Kuliyama Kimikar Mishalim. Everybody agrees when it comes to the payment for theft, everybody believes that it's Ke'en Shiganav. And that's not a distinction, not a difference between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. I mean, that Beit Shammai's din is unique to Etnan. It's a special Gzeret HaKatuv by Etnan. That doesn't mean that they think this everywhere. It doesn't mean that it's true with regards to Geneva. And they might agree to Beit Hillel's position there and say with regards to Geneva that it's Keshata Geneva that you pay. If that's the case, now you have both Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agreeing that it's Keshata Geneva. If it's Keshata Geneva, again, it's a problem for Rav. That's the brighta that we brought before. That brighta says that you pay ke'ein sheganav. And that's true. Again, if you think like Rashi, this is Rabbi Ilah, Rabbi Chanina, brighta says this, and they're arguing about whether Shinui is koneh, but they both agree that the payment is assessed based on ke'ein sheganav. Or if you say that it's Beit Shammai, even Beit Shammai, who doesn't say there's a Shinui, still says the payment is ke'ein sheganav. So le metavi tiyuf to derav. That should be a strong refutation of the position of Rav. Damarav, Karen ke'en sheganav mishalem. That Karen you pay ke'en sheganav. But when it comes to tashlumei kefil, tashlumei arba v'chamisha, kashata madam adin. You pay that based on the current when you're here in the Beit Din. So if you're telling me that the kefil and the arba v'chamisha and that brighter are assessed based on ke'en sheganav, whether according to Rashi that's Rabbi Ilah and Rabbi Chanina, or whether according to the other Rishonim it's talking about Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, they both agree that you pay Tashlumei Keifa Arba V'Chamisha Ke'en Sheganav. And that's against Rav's position who says that you always pay that Keshata Mada B'din. So Amarova comes up with a solution. Tzla'im Kidmi Kara Damim B'Shalachshav. That a sheep you assess based on the origins. The money you do based on today. That is the explanation of Rav's position and how he gets out of the problem. He says, yes, the bright is right. We go after Keshata Ganeva. But we also go after Kedahashto. And that is because he bifurcates the din over here. Now, the easiest way to explain this, and seemingly this is the way Rashi explains it, is to remember that when we started at the Masechta, we discussed that when it comes to Nezek, and when it comes to Gneva, the repayment of the item by the individual caused the Nezek, the Mazik, or the Ganav, there are one of two ways to formulate what we're interested in happening over here. One possibility is that we are interested in seeing you replace the item that you took away or damaged over here. We're not so much interested in the loss that was caused, but rather in the utility and the object which you took away. So what we want you to do is replace that object, to return the object to the individual so he has what he had before. The other possibility, or the other way to formulate the repayment of Nezek, or the necessity to make payment for Nezek, is that we want you to make up for the loss that was caused over here. You were the cause of a loss. We want you to simply make up for that loss. We want you to compensate for that loss. We're not as much interested in restoring everything to its former state. What we are is we want to make sure that you don't cause a loss to another party. If you view Rav's position through the prism of that first formulation, which is the whole point here is to restore the individual to the object that they had at the time of the Gezeiva, or that time of the Nezek, then what Rava is telling you is, when you stole a Tleh, that's what you took from the individual. Yes, now, or over time, it had grown older and became an Ayo. But what you took from the individual was a Tleh. So if you come back to pay a Tleh, then we are fine with that, because you replaced the object that you took from him. You've actually now restored this individual to the former state, which is that he had a Tleh, and now you've returned it and he still has a Tleh. So we're happy with that. On the other hand, if you're going to pay with damim, if you're going to pay with money, then it's not sufficient that you just give him money to compensate for the loss. We want you to give him money so that he again can be restored to his former state. Well, the only way to do that is to assess it kedahashta, is to assess it based on the current value of what a tleh is. Because we want you to be able to take that money, buy a tleh, and be back or have what you had before. And so therefore, when you're paying with cash and not with the tleh itself, we want you to make that payment based on the current market price so that you can replace the item that was stolen. So therefore, depending on whether you pay back with the object itself, then you could just give back the object that you took, the tleh that you took, you give back the tleh. On the other hand, if you are using money to replace the item that you took, we want you to give sufficient cash or sufficient money so that he can buy and restore the item that you took. And the only way you can do that is to assess it or to value it at the current price. And therefore, the braitot that speak about Ke'en Sheganav are talking about situations or scenarios where you are giving back the actual animal. You're replacing a tleh with another tleh. The statement of Rav that says that you pay Ke'en Kedahashto, that is referring to the cases where the person's making compensation through cash and not through a replacement of the object itself. The problem with that explanation, or the deficit in that explanation, is that that would be true if that distinction was in the keren, when we're speaking about the principal amount. Over here, the problem, or the difference between the bright and rav, is about the teshlumei arba v'chamisha and the teshlumei kefel, whether you pay kishata gneva, or whether you pay kidahashto. And that doesn't seem necessarily to relate to the chakira that we spoke about in terms of replacement value versus compensation for loss incurred, because those are penalties that are placed on top. They are not about the repayment of the object. There, even Rav agrees that by keren you pay ke'en sheganav. And so therefore, the Bali et Tosafot offer alternative explanations as to what the statement of Rava means over here. The way that the Re explains this is, the Re says that when it comes to assessing what he stole, we go kashata gneva. What did he steal? When he stole, was it a sheep? Was it an ayo? What was it? Let's figure that out. That was kashata gneva. That's assessed based on the point of theft. At the time of theft, we assess what he took. On the other hand, when you want to assess the value of what he took, meaning that he wants to repay the individual for what he stole, then we go based on the current market price of that item. Because he is trying to replace the item that he took. So we have to find out what he took. And now we want to figure out what he has to replace. And the two possibilities of how to formulate what the Re is saying, that when it comes to Shivcha and Chisha, which is the change in the animal itself, that has no impact on the Chiyuv Kefel. Whereas when it comes to Yukra Vizola, when it comes to market variations in the price, that does have impact on the kefa, or the amount that you have to pay. Shevach and kichesh are determined by the shata gneva, whereas yokra v'zola, the change in market price, is nikva yedei shat hamada bedin. The reason being that the gneva happens at the time that the individual stole it from the balim. So that is the koveya for the shevach and the kichesh. On the other hand, when it comes to the payment of kefel, which is determined by shatamad budin, which is then subject to the vagaries and the variations within the market price, That is because either what we said earlier, that the Raivud suggests that the Chiyuv HaKefel only comes because it's a knas imposed by Beit Din. So that Chiyuv, or that obligation, only happens at the time that he is obligated in Beit Din. And that's when that switch gets turned on. So the price is determined at that moment. On the other hand, you could formulate it, as Eichik Zatzal suggests, in the following manner, which is that there are two mechayvim over here. There is the mechayev of gneva, which is the individual taking the item from the house of the Baalim. The chiyuv of kefel does not derive from the gneva itself, but rather the lack of hashava, the lack of returning the item to the individual. Yeshivat exilah sher gazal, the violation of that is what generates the kefel. So the gneva is determined by the time that the person took it from the Baalim, because that's the shat gneva, that's the mechayev for the karen. And that's why you pay ke'en sheganav. And that's why kichesh v'shibeach, from that point forward, it makes no difference. On the other hand, for kefel, the mechayev is not the gneva itself, but rather the lack of hashava, not returning to its original owner. And so when you don't return to its original owner, when does that happen? When is that finalized? At shemat hamadah b'din. Once you are now taken to din and you haven't returned it at that point, that's the mechayev for the kefel. And that's why the pricing of the kefel is determined at that point in time. That's the way the Ri explains it. The Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, has a different view of what it means here of Tla'im and Damim. And he says here in the Tosafot, Rabbeinu Tam Eferesh, Dein Chiluk Ben Tla'im LeYukul Azola. There's no difference between the type or the state of the animal, I mean, what it was at the time, and the market appreciation. V'Hachi Perusho, this is the explanation. Tla'im, Shediber Behen HaBraita, the Tla'im that the Braita speaks about, Danu Tla'a, V'Nase Ayu, that's a sheep that became a ram. Shenishtanu l'malyuta k'dimikara. If they are now changing to be better, then you pay k'dimikara. You pay based on the original price. V'u'adim b'yokra v'zola. That's true of appreciation or depreciation. D'mikara shavin zuza u'besof arba'a. Dainu k'dimikara. That if they were originally worth a zuz, and now they're worth four, you pay k'dimikara. V'lahachmir al dalet v'hei lo amar rav. Rav never came to make Dal V'Hei be bigger Chumrah, but rather, he's just coming to explain to you something about Dal V'Hei, which is, Damim, Perish, Damim D'Aribahu Rav. Rav, who spoke about monetary compensation, Gagon, Demi Ikara, Shavin Arba'a. In the beginning, they're worth four. Ulusov, Shavim Zuza. And the end, they're worth a Zuz. Dinishtanu L'Griuta. It went down in value. Ba'ikam Arav, Kishalak Shav, Bu'a Demitlaim. There you pay now, and it's the same thing with the Tleh. A Tleh that went to an aisle, and for whatever reason, that's a diminution in value, or something happened that took it down in value. Then you pay the Dal V'Hei based on the lower price. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says, it's just the opposite of what the Ri says, basically. The Rabbeinu Tam says that the Keren is Ke'en Sheganav, but the Tashlumei Dal V'Hei is basically a Kula. The four and five times is going to be the lower of the price at the time of the Gneva, or the lower of the price at the time Me'achshav, Kashto, what is now? Because we're not after making this multiple as high a multiple as possible. We're simply trying to accomplish the Dalet V'Hei. So what Rav says is, the Karen, you have to pay Kashat Gneva. On the other hand, the Dalet V'Hei, we're going to only assess that based on what's the lower of Shat Gneva, or Kedahashto Kedahachshav. And those are represented by the Tla'im and the Damim. Tla'im represents something that went up in value, and that's why the Braita says you pay kashat gneva. The damim that Rav spoke about originally, which is the example we brought when he discussed with Rabbah, he said that was a case where it went from dalid down to one, where it was a diminution in value. It depreciated. In that case, you paid kedahachshav, kedahashto. So the Rabbeinu Tam says that's what Rav's position is, that you always pay the lower of the two when it comes to dal v'hei kefel. When it comes to the Karen, you always pay Keshata Gneva. That's whether it's up or down in value, you always pay Keshata Gneva. The Ri, on the other hand, views it as being, we assess the Gneva, or the object at the time of the Gneva. So we have to assess whether it was a Tleh, whether it was whatever it was, we assess that as Shata Gneva. And that's what the Bright is speaking about. The assessment of whether it's a Tleh or an Ayo, that's set by Shata Gneva. How much you have to pay now? That's Kedahashta. Look at the market price today and tell me what you pay today for that. Then we'll determine what you have to pay or the assessment of the value. And that is because the Ri, and he says this back in the Tosafot on Samachem and Aleph, Uimilte derav mashma, shibali apot kocho shel karen. He's coming to improve the value of the keren. Ulegara koach kefil dal vehe. And to diminish the value of the dal vehe. The kamar achya the keren. He's saying to restore the keren, up the keren. Davka kein shaganav. Viachya mashma lashon yipui koach. That keren sounds like yipui koach, sounds like you're improving it. Viesh lamar, the achya in lashon yipui. And the end, the re rejects that and says no. That achir doesn't mean improvement or to benefit. El lashon tashlumim. Rather, it's compensation. B'chol davar shemashlim achisaron shganav o gazal kari achya. Anything that comes to make up the compensation, the loss that was incurred, is called achya. Achya means to restore the loss. And so what you see here is the re explaining what's the din of gneva. The din of gneva, the din of nezek or gneva, is that we want you to pay back the loss that was created. We want you to make whole the loss that you created. Well, where was the loss created? The loss was created b'shata gneva. That loss we want you to make whole on. To replace the object, we don't need that. So we assess the value of shata gneva. Shata gneva is, achya, as the Balei Tosafot say, a restoration of the loss. It's taking back or paying for the loss that you created. And so based on that, you always assess the keren k'shata gneva. The Shlemi Avraham Chamisha, which has nothing to do with restoration of loss, that has all to do with knas, that can be assigned or that can be assessed based on kedashto. That can be assigned or determined based on today. It says v'chein mashba sof shmaita, and the reason that's consistent what we see at the end of the sugya, the kamar tzlaim kedimikara mishalim, that the tzlaim is based on the original assessment kifal davei kishel achshav, and davei is paid based on now. Mashma afilu miikara shav yizuza or the sof dalit. Even if the keren originally was 1 and now it's 4, dumia detlev and I say ayo mishalem kefil kidashta. You pay the kefil now based on the higher price. The payer should read the kaman based on what the read says later on. Shama fresh bitrat Hashem umi or rabbeinu tam perish binyan acher the legara koach kefil kamar rav. So according to the rabbeinu tam, the whole purpose of rav is to always get the lowest price for the kefil or the lowest price for the dal vehei. On the other hand, the view of the re is to say that the restoration that is spoken about by the keren, that restoration or that compensation to make up for the loss is exactly what's it doing. It's making up for the loss. That is assessed at the shat gneva, because that's when the loss was incurred, and now you're trying to make it whole. That's the assessment of the keren. When it comes to the shlumei dalet vehei, there, yes, we're going to assess it based on the shata gzela, what you took. But then we're going to look at the market value today and assume that we multiply it for the dalet vehei. That could be to your benefit or to your detriment. That could be because it's gone up in value and now your dalet vehei is going to be multiples of that. Or it's gone down in value and then your dalet vehei will be less because of that. But it's not that we're always trying to make the dalet vehei less. The dalet vehei can sometimes be more, can sometimes be less. That is because what we explained before, the concept is that the keren is the restitution, the compensation to the party that was incurring the loss. The other hand, the dal vehei is the beit din imposing a fine on the individual. That fine is irrespective of what the loss was. It's all about what the price is currently. And that price will determine or set the tone or the tenor for the kefel and for the dal v'chamisha according to the re. Again, the Rabbeinu Tam views it the other way around, like the original way that the re explained it, which is that Yipui koach is that the keren is a yipui koach, but that means dal v'chamisha does not have that yipui koach. That means that dal v'hei is always on the underhand. We always going to have the worst scenario, and therefore we're going to take the lesser of the shat gneva and the shat hashta to determine the dal v'hei, because there's no reason to extend the knas more than one of those two values, the lower of those two values, because Rav is saying the compensation is done through the keren. The dal v'hei is a penalty. That penalty, there's no instruction from the Torah to make that as high as possible. What Rav says is the Torah says pay dal v'hei. If we can come up with ways to pay dal v'hei which are less, then that's fine as long as you're paying the dal v'hei. As long as the knas is imposed, that's enough. It doesn't matter that it's less or more. If we're going to try to get it to the lowest amount so that it's the knas is the lowest fine possible. Okay, we're going to stop here 12 lines down on the top of Samach Vav Amin Aleph.